are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Rejoining me for our Tuesday episode, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Sunday was a really ugly loss for the Seahawks, and so far, it's been a pretty ugly season for the team. 3-6, they are in last place in the NFC West by themselves, thanks to the 49ers beating up on the Rams on Monday Night Football. They're 14th in the NFC standings, so it has been an ugly year for the Seahawks. For that reason, we're busting out our first Tell the Truth Tuesday of the season, taking a page from Pete Carroll's playbook, just a little different day of the week, looking into what's gone wrong so far for the Seahawks on offense. Plus, we're going to be introducing the Arizona Cardinals, Seattle's upcoming Week 11 opponent. Thanks for making Locked On Seahawks your first listen every day. We are free and available on all platforms. So once again, thanks for listening 5 days a week. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. I feel like I'm going to be referencing Jim Mora Sr. a lot the next several weeks because the Seahawks at 3-6, it's tough to think about them making the playoffs. Playoffs? You kidding me? But somehow, even after being shut out at Lambeau Field on Sunday, the Seahawks are still just one game out of the final wildcard spot in the NFC. Right now, the Carolina Panthers at 5-5 have that final wildcard spot, and the New Orleans Saints are 5-4 right in front of them. So this, again, it's a very top-heavy conference, and that opens the door for teams that have 3 or 4 wins right now to still play themselves back into contention. And your most optimistic fans, of course, Rob, are going to say, well, we haven't won in Green Bay for 21 years. We haven't won there since Bill Clinton was president. So, you know, we weren't going to win that game. Let's just move on. Everything's going to be fine moving forward. But then again, as we'll talk about later, if you saw this offense on Sunday, you got to wonder, where are they going to get any wins down the remainder of the stretch if they're going to play anywhere close to that? Nonetheless, they are still in the playoff hunt somehow.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that when we are seeing so many games throughout all of the NFL, Corbin, where you're seeing the underdog pull off these amazing upsets, and you referenced the San Francisco 49ers, beating the Los Angeles Rams on Monday Night Football. I mean, I think that was a more unlikely scenario than the Seahawks walking into Lambeau Field and handing the Green Bay Packers a defeat there, especially considering that Aaron Rodgers was coming off of his COVID absence. Now, of course, that's not what happened. The Seahawks lost 17-0, the very first shutout of Russell Wilson's career. So you can have those Seahawk blue kind of colored glasses and say, hey, the Seahawks are going to right the ship. Their defense is playing its best football of the season. You give Russell Wilson another week to get that right middle finger a little bit more healed up, and maybe they will be able to beat an Arizona Cardinals team that has now lost 2 straight. Now, of course, they didn't have Kyler Murray, but who's to say that Kyler Murray is going to be back for this game? Who's to say that Kyler Murray is going to be able to suddenly just resurrect the player that he was prior to his injury? So I think that there is reason for optimism. And the biggest is something that you mentioned just as you were opening the show, in that the Seahawks are only officially one game out of the playoffs. Because with the 17 games and now 7 teams being allowed into the playoffs, then there's a lot of teams who have 3 wins or 4 wins that might still be in the playoff hunt a couple of weeks from now. And the Seahawks, with Russell Wilson, have the best quarterback of that bunch.
Well, based on history, based on Sunday, not exactly the case. But again, we'll give him a pass for his first game back from a pretty significant injury. Who knows if he was ready to go? Certainly didn't look like it for large portions of that game. But you mentioned those blue-colored lens. I'm going to go with the action green-colored lens. And we're talking about really being optimistic about this football team, because you did mention that defense. And they are playing as well as any defense in the league. Maybe Green Bay right now, they're ahead of everybody as far as I'm concerned, the way that they're playing. You got to give them that credit on Sunday. This is a fantastic defense that Joe Barry has in Green Bay. But Seattle's defense, you can make an argument right now, the last 4 games, that they have been a top 5 defense. The numbers have been there. They haven't been giving up a lot of points. To hold Green Bay to just 3 points the first 3 quarters on Sunday. That was a big, big deal in my mind. So this is the defense. Seems like they've really turned the corner. This is the toughest opponent they've had to go against, and they kept playing at a very high level. Jamal Adams looked like the game changer that we've been waiting for him to be. Bobby Wagner was Bobby Wagner. Jordan Brooks having a bit of a coming out party. We even got to see Rasheem Green get in the backfield a few times. The corners are playing really well. So that's the biggest reason to be optimistic. And also the idea that they don't have any more games at Lambeau Field. That certainly is something to check off as being optimistic about. But they still have games against the Houston Texans, the Washington football team that just lost Chase Young for the year to a torn ACL, a devastating loss for their defense. And they just beat Tampa Bay. Talk about a buzzkill when you finally get some momentum this season. Huge injury for them. They have the Bears and the Lions remaining on the schedule. And that game against the 49ers suddenly looks a lot tougher with the way San Francisco played. But Seattle has dominated them over the years. So that game's at home as well. I just rattled off five games that the Seahawks, I believe, will still be favored to win. So you add those in, that gets them to 8 victories. Now you have your 2 matchups with the Cardinals, and you have a game with the Rams to close out your schedule. They've got to find a way to win at least one of those games, and that's assuming they win all the other 5 that they are expected to win. You got to win at least one of those 3 really hard games against division rivals to have a chance to get in the playoffs. I still think 9 wins is probably the floor to getting that 7 seed, even with the way things look right now. But they certainly have the schedule to get it done.
Yeah, they do. And then isn't that what you want? I mean, I think that's what Pete Carroll wants, is you want games against your divisional rivals to be the ones that are going to make or break your season. And, you know, with all due respect to the Arizona Cardinals, at times this season, they have looked absolutely unbeatable, but that's not been the last 2 weeks where they have been basically floored by some of their opponents, you know.
Well, they beat San Francisco 2 weeks ago. It was they lost to Green Bay. They played 2 games very close together because they had that Thursday night game. Yeah. But yeah, they have not looked right 2 of the past 3 games. And Kyler Murray got hurt in the Packers game. But yeah, there's not a team in the league right now that is unfallible. There's not a team that's close. It's really difficult to know who the favorite is right now, because we've seen a lot of juggernauts get beat by teams they shouldn't have lost to over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I would have a hard time arguing that the Seattle Seahawks in 2021 look anything like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers a year ago. But I do think that it is worth repeating that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were a wild card entering the playoffs, and then wound up getting hot at the right time and wound up winning the Super Bowl. And so to me, that is what you're hoping for. Just get into the tournament. And again, this is a defense that is trending upward. This is offense that I think you have to believe is going to get it right. We're going to talk about that here in just a couple of minutes about what can Seattle do to get their offense on the right track, or if they can. But I think that history suggests that they will. And if that is the case with the 5 different winnable games, and I 100% agree with you, I think Seattle will be the odds-on favorite in those 5 games, that if Seattle can just muster one more victory, perhaps this week at home against Arizona, then you might be able to do precisely that. Sneak into the tournament and then see if you might be able to make something crazy happen in the playoffs.
This has been the talk, though. This is me taking off those action green sunglasses. This has been the talk for the last several weeks, is, oh, we're just going to get hot. We're going to win a few games and then we're going to get on a roll. But you can keep talking about that until you actually do it on the field. You know, I don't know that I can trust that this team is going to be able to do that. They have not shown any consistency this year on either side of the football. I guess the defense the last 3 or 4 games has been playing with a lot more consistency, but consistency has just been something this team in general has not been able to do this year. And it has cost them a number of games. They've had some bad fortune with Wilson getting hurt, missing 3 games, and they've had a few other injuries they've had to deal with. Not having Chris Carson, I think, continues to be a bigger deal than a lot of people realize. And that's not slighting Alex Collins, because I think he's done a very good job as his replacement. But Chris Carson just brings a different element to this run game. You know, but you look at all those circumstances and this team just keeps saying, we're going to get it right. We believe. Okay, that's great. Love the confidence. Now it's got to be done on the field. And with what was said last week, to see that offensive performance after those comments during the week about how confident they were, it's tough to take those comments with anything other than a grain of salt. They got to go out and they got to prove it. If they go out and they win two or three games in a row, then we can revisit this discussion and be like, you know what? Maybe they are going to do what they said they were going to do when things are finally clicking. But that has to start with winning a couple games in a row, winning one game at a time and then losing another game. You can't afford to do that now. You don't have the margin for error starting the season 3-6. You got to rattle off a bunch of wins, and it's got to start. I really believe this next week here against the Cardinals that this game is a must win. You fall to 3-7, you're not mathematically eliminated, but from there, you pretty much got to win out to have a chance to get in the playoffs with all the other teams that are in the same record area. Some of those teams are going to win games down the stretch. So this, to me, is a critical must-win game, and we'll get to more on that later in the show. But first, it's Tell the Truth Tuesday. It's time to figure out what the heck is going on with this Seahawks offense that was held to 0 points at Lambeau Field. We'll be investigating when we return. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
In life, we're all bound for different things. With beachbound.com vacations, you could be bound for adventure, bound for passion, bound for discovery, or bound for togetherness, bound for immersion, bound for rejuvenation, or you may be bound for encountering the unexpected. Personally, when I'm at a beach resort, I'm bound to end up at a poolside bar or casting a line for the biggest fish in the sea, or maybe creating my own taco fight. As long as I've got a good view, a tight line in my hand and a stiff drink in the other, I'm as happy as I can be. With beachbound.com, you can find the perfect beach vacation for you, no matter what you're looking for. What are you bound for? Visit beachbound.com today.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. It's Tell the Truth Tuesday. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. The Seahawks entered this season with such lofty expectations on offense. That was to be expected. You had Russell Wilson returning, your 8-time Pro Bowl quarterback, with two superstar receivers in DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett. You added Gabe Jackson to bolster your pass protection up front. Dwayne Brown's returning. Damian Lewis is supposed to have a tremendous leap in his sophomore season. You've got your right tackle, Brandon Shellback, healthy. Chris Carson returns. Alex Collins is back. You're hoping Rashad Penny is going to be able to turn the corner and revisit his 2019 production before his injury. They have all these different weapons, and you have a new coordinator in Shane Waldron that's supposed to be bringing a lot of new elements to the scheme to bring out the best in this group. And here we are, getting ready for week 11, and the Seahawks are ranked 22nd in the NFL right now in scoring offense. They're 30th in yards, 30th in passing offense, and 29th in rushing offense. And oh, by the way, they're 30th in third down conversion rate. Yuck. You read off all those stats, and that just tells you, and you know, there's plenty of fans out there that are saying, oh, we're just a few plays away from figuring it out. Maybe that's the case, but reading all of those numbers there, it doesn't look like they're one quick fix away, even with the fact Wilson missed three games, was replaced by Geno Smith. It just doesn't seem like they are one quick fix away from suddenly being a top five, top 10 offense again. It seems like there's a lot going wrong to have those type of numbers and be that poor in so many different aspects.
Yeah, I wish I could disagree with you, but I cannot. You know, just a couple of seconds ago, Corbin, I was recording an advertisement for beachbound.com. And I think I would equate it to this. You know, as somebody who has spent more time fishing on the ocean in a boat than on the beach, I felt seasick watching the way the Seahawks performed on offense, not just against the Green Bay Packers, which, as we talked about, have a spectacular defense, but basically the way that their offense has performed almost regardless of who the quarterback has been the last couple of weeks. So I think that it's wise that we are now dedicating this Tuesday segment to Tell the Truth Tuesday, rather than some of the things that we've done in the past, like looking in the kind of the rear view mirror at some of the past performances against the Arizona Cardinals team this week. that I think the Seahawks fans out there listening know very well, that the Seattle has had some very interesting, tumultuous games against Arizona at times. And I think that, you know, when we're talking about Tell the Truth Tuesday, if you're going to focus in on the offense, it again has been something that might make you want to vomit, because it has been hugely disappointing. You talked about some of the different reasons why Seahawks fans had every right to be excited about this offense. And two of the players that you didn't mention, Dee Eskridge, their second round pick, who has all of the exciting flashy plays that warranted his being Seattle's second round selection. Of course, he has been a huge disappointment. Gerald Everett, who knows Shane Waldron's offense better than anybody on Seattle's team, having played for him previously in LA, he should have been a focal point of the offense from the very get-go, but he has been the epitome of inconsistency as well, through his own actions as well as Seattle's inability to get him the football. So for a Seahawks offense that I argue is as talented as any as we've seen in years to be as abysmal as it has, I 100% agree with you. This is not a case of where if Seattle just fixes one thing, then suddenly everything's going to go into place. From the offensive coordinator, from the quarterback, from the receivers dropping balls, receivers missing blocks, offensive missing blocks, running backs' inability to stay healthy. There are all kinds of issues on this offense. If the Seahawks have any chance of making the playoffs this year, they've all got to get fixed, and right now.
I've gotten a number of messages and tweets on social media over the last 24 to 48 hours asking, what's the biggest problem with this offense? And I answered the question yesterday in our Monday mailbag. And there are so many different pieces to the puzzle here. You can't just blame any one person. Russell Wilson has been one of the worst third down quarterbacks in the entire NFL. 41% completion rate, 31% conversion rate when he throws the football on third down. He's been abysmal. He hasn't had a lot of help in that regard. A lot of really tough third and long situations that have been set up by not doing well on first and second down. So not all that's on Russell Wilson, but he hasn't performed well in those third down situations. Shane Waldron, since week one, you know, we talked about this before the show, Rob, but I'm right now to the point where I would compare the first season for Shane Waldron to the first year of a politician in office. And what I mean by that is there's all these promises, and there were, we talked about them throughout the offseason, the promises about pre-snap motion, the more diverse run game, more under center, more play action from under center, using tight ends more, an emphasis on the quick passing game. The first game, it was almost like the politician, Shane Waldron, was saying, you know what? I got to show that I am going to honor my promises for at least one game. And everybody loved what they saw. We saw tons of pre-snap motion. We saw jet sweeps that were exciting. We saw the motion used to help diversify the run game. Tight ends got involved. Gerald Everett caught an early touchdown. You still had your big plays to Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. The offensive line looked much better. But ever since that first game, a lot of those wrinkles have just disappeared. It's almost like the politician is now saying, you know what? They got a taste of it. Now I'm good to go. I can coast. And I have given him the benefit of the doubt up to this point, and maybe he turns things around. Shane Waldron seems like he's a very intelligent guy. He's been in some really good coaching staff, so he's been brought up by Bill Belichick, Sean McVay. He's had really good mentors to work with him. He's a first-time offensive coordinator in the NFL. He was never a coordinator at the college level, nowhere above high school going into this process. So there was always that outside chance. What if he's not ready for this role yet? What if he isn't equipped to handle this? Being a coordinator in the NFL is not easy. You're going against masterminds week in, week out. A lot of them with a lot more experience than Shane Waldron has. And so I'm not putting all the blame on Shane Waldron. Like I said, Russell Wilson has had his issues when he's played. The run game has been non-existent at times. The offensive line gave up 30-plus pressures on Sunday. It's really hard to have an offense when you are allowing defenders to get in the backfield like that and get after your quarterback. So all those different factors have to be weighed into this. It's not all on Waldron. It's not all on Wilson. It's not all on the receivers dropping passes or struggling to get open. Those are all factors that have to be accounted for. But based on what I've seen, I think the buck has to stop with Shane Waldron. You took over an offense that under Brian Schottenheimer was top 10 each of the past 3 years, and now they're 22nd. And I know Wilson's injury played into that, but they weren't necessarily lighting up scoreboards before Wilson got hurt either. They were very inconsistent those first 4.5 games. So the onus is on Waldron to step it up. He's got to do a better job getting his team in position to succeed, and then the players have to execute better. It's that plain and simple, not an easy fix when we're talking about a widespread issue like this where it's talking whole offense, but Waldron has got to step it up. I have not been impressed with the way he's adjusted and the way that he's handled game plans, especially in the second half of games. That has still been a major problem for this team offensively. Need to see growth from him, or this could be a one-and-done situation. That is not an exaggeration here. When you inherit a team that has this much talent, particularly at quarterback and receiver, you better be able to put points on the board. If you're not, you're going to have a very short leash.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that I think that you articulated pretty well, Corbin, about the fact that Shane Waldron needs to be better, that Russell Wilson needs to be better. I'm going to talk about a couple of others who need to be better, and I'll go one step even higher. I think Pete Carroll, and the fact that he is the one who, of course, was critical in picking out Shane Waldron, then he needed to be better with his evaluation of Shane Waldron. Frankly, I think that either Pete Carroll or general manager John Schneider, or whoever else who put Russell Wilson in position to play that game, because Wilson just was not the typical accurate Russell Wilson that we've seen in the past. And so somebody has to step up to Russell Wilson. Now, I mentioned this before. This is the Seattle Seahawks, not the Russell Wilson squad. And so there has to be somebody who is going to put your offensive coordinator and your quarterback and make them accountable. And I haven't yet to see anybody do that. And so I think that again, Russell Wilson and Shane Waldron do deserve all of the griping that they are receiving, not only for this abysmal performance against the Green Bay Packers, and obviously a very difficult circumstances, but Pete Carroll as well. And I think that if we're going to focus in on some of the players, then one of the players who really has been frustrating to me so far this season, I'll actually mention two of them, Dwayne Brown, the fact that he held out the entire training camp. I think that we all were a little bit blinded by those electric green or mama blue colored Seahawk glasses and just believe that Dwayne Brown is going to be able to do what the Hall of Famer before him, Walter Jones, did year after year, be able to just come in, miss training camp and play at a Canton level. We have not seen that from Dwayne Brown. And then to me, one of my gripes would be the play of the receiver, Freddie Swain. Considering that D. Eskridge has been unable to play and he hasn't shown any type of impact when he has been on the field for the Seahawks, then that really has put the onus on Freddie Swain. Yep. I saw too many missed catches. I saw too many missed blocks, from Freddie Swain. I mean, to me, that is someone you absolutely need to step up his play. And so I do think that there is plenty of blame to be spread around for the Seahawks, but I think that those are some of the names that absolutely have to be at the very tip of the tongue of anybody criticizing Seattle's performance so far this season.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned those names. I also, Damian Lewis has got to be better. Damian Yep. Lewis has had a really rough sophomore season, particularly in pass protection. He got called for a hold on Sunday that was not a hold, but he got pancaked. It was an embarrassing play for different reasons than it ended up being, called a hold. It was not a hold. He just got owned. And he gave up 6 pressures in this game. They need Damian Lewis to play like he did as a rookie. He has not looked right. I don't know if he's playing with an injury that he shouldn't be playing with, what's going on, but he has not looked right most of this season. And it's impacted their run game. It's impacted their pass protection. I mean, you can go on and on. There's a number of players that are underachieving. But when you have that many players that aren't figuring things out, there's two things going on here. Either the offense doesn't have as much talent as people thought that it did, or the entire group is underachieving because of poor coaching. I have to believe that it's the latter when we're talking about these two. We know there's talent on this football team. You've got an all-pro quarterback. You've got 2 all-pro caliber receivers. Gerald Everett is a very athletic, capable receiving tight end. Will Dissly is a reliable target when you target him. this offensive line's got some really good proven veterans. It's got some young guys like Lewis that should be good. So it goes back to the coaching, in my opinion. So Shane Waldron, Pete Carroll, you have to elevate your game to get the players to elevate their game. This team has too much talent for this offense to be scuffling this much. And so, again, I think a lot of this falls on Shane Waldron's shoulders being the play caller. You got to do a better job. But Pete Carroll, you know, you got to be holding him accountable too, not just Russell Wilson. Your play caller needs to be held accountable, and he needs to do a better job. So all the way from the top down, everybody's got to do a better job. The talent is there for them to turn things around, but we'll see if it actually happens. This will be an interesting game coming up. The Cardinals have a lot of talent on defense, but they have been gashed a few games this year. It's a group that has started to show some cracks. So maybe this will be the week that the Seahawks can get things rolling offensively. We're going to talk about the Arizona Cardinals when we come back in the third quarter. Some additions, departures, their draft class. We know Rob gets excited about that. Plus, inside the numbers, breaking down the 8-2 Cardinals. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hey, Seahawks fans, this is Corbin Smith with an incredible app everyone who buys gas needs to know about. It's called Get Upside. My listeners are making up to 25 cents for every gallon of gas every time they fill up. Just download the free Get Upside app in the App Store or Google Play right now and use the promo code Touchdown to get a bonus 25 cents per gallon on your first fill up. That's up to 50 cents cash back. Don't pay full price of the pump anymore. Get cash back using Get Upside. Just download the app for free and use the promo code Touchdown to get up to 50 cents per gallon cash back on your first tank. Some people who drive a lot are making as much as $200 to $300 a month in cash back, and there's no catch. The cash back gets added right to your account. You can cash out anytime to your bank account, PayPal, or an e-gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free GetUpside app and use a promo code Touchdown to get up to 50 cents per gallon cash back on your first tank. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Tuesday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. The Seahawks coming off a tough loss in Green Bay will look to right the ship, get their fourth victory of the season with the 8-2 Arizona Cardinals coming to Lumen Field on Sunday. Going to be a very difficult matchup, especially if Kyler Murray is back from his ankle injury. He's missed the last two games, replaced by Colt McCoy. The Cardinals have had some other significant injuries they've been dealing with too. DeAndre Hopkins, their star receiver, has been banged up. Nonetheless, this is still a team that 2 weeks ago, even without Murray and Hopkins, just beat the living daylights out of the San Francisco 49ers. This has been a really weird season because we just mentioned earlier that the 49ers schooled the Rams last night. So you just don't know what's going to happen from week to week in the NFL. The parity is real. Seattle's hoping that plays in their factor, being the underdog at home against a Cardinals team that underwent some major transformations during the offseason. The biggest addition they made, and it saddens me because J.J. Watt is one of my favorite players and one of my favorite men in the NFL. He was playing really well for the Cardinals, and then before their Thursday night matchup against the Packers, they announced he had a shoulder injury that would require surgery, and he is done for the season. So, positive standpoint, Seattle doesn't have to worry about J.J. Watt in this upcoming game, but again, a really, really great guy on and off the field. It stinks that with his injury history, you got to wonder, is he going to be able to bounce back from this with the injuries he's had, the age he's at now? But that was their biggest addition. But they had several other big additions too in the offseason, including trading for Rodney Hudson, giving them one of the best centers in the NFL to really bolster that offensive line.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to start, you know, just because the Arizona Cardinals have made several significant additions who weren't just hype. They've actually played very well. You know, J.J. Watt, as you mentioned, has been spectacular. Rodney Hudson, you know, one of two Pro Bowl offensive linemen that the Las Vegas Raiders traded. The other one, of course, being Gabe Jackson, the Seattle, you know, got in a trade with the Raiders. Rodney Hudson has played really good football for the Arizona Cardinals. All that said, I would argue that the most significant addition to the Cardinals, with all due respect to J.J. Watt, who was playing at a spectacular level earlier in the season, but is now injured. But I would argue it's been James Conner, the running back. And his statistics are through the roof. Anybody in fantasy football out there is absolutely loving if they drafted James Conner, because his touchdowns this season are among all of the best in the NFL. But it's not just the statistics, Corbin, that I want to mention about with James Conner. He has brought an element of toughness that I think the Arizona Cardinals, frankly, didn't have before. This is Cliff Kingsbury's team. This is the kind of a run and gun, run and shoot kind of an offense that I don't know that most of the offenses in the NFL who throw the ball and have a diminutive quarterback the way that the Arizona Cardinals have, with a spectacular talent in Kyler Murray, but obviously as a smaller guy who has struggled a little bit with durability so far this season, as we mentioned, missing the last couple of games. But James Conner will punch you in the mouth. And considering the fact that the Seahawks just got punched in the mouth with A.J. Dillon, then I think that that's something we need to kind of be focusing in on here, because James Conner is exactly the type of player that Seattle struggled with, and it makes the Arizona Cardinals offense that much more diverse than it's been in Cliff Kingsbury's previous couple of seasons.
And they added a couple other of really good veterans to this offense as well. A.J. Green, former All-Pro receiver, obviously not the player he once was, but he's had a pretty solid season for the Cardinals, going with DeAndre Hopkins and Christian Kirk and rookie Rondale Moore. I mean, they are loaded at receiver. And then they went out and traded for Zach Ertz, too, to upgrade at the tight end position. So they did a lot to really upgrade this team, and I think that's one of the reasons why they're sitting at the top of the NFC standings. They are one of the best teams in the NFL because they were able to shore up a number of holes in some areas that already were strengths. They said, well, we're not good enough there, so let's go get A.J. Green and put him with the receivers that we have. Let's go get Rodney Hudson and let's shore up the offensive line. They made a number of moves that really helped this team take that next big step after missing the playoffs again last year. And of course, Kyler Murray being one of the best young quarterbacks in the league doesn't hurt either. As far as departures go, they lost some names. Patrick Peterson left for the Vikings in free agency, but Byron Murphy was ready to take over. They like the corners that they have. So that has not been a big loss for them. Devondre Campbell didn't do a lot in his 1 year in Arizona. He's benefited from going to Green Bay. Ended up not being a big loss with Zaven Collins being drafted in the first round. You got him and Isaiah Simmons, your two first rounders the last 2 years at linebacker, those hybrid, really athletic guys that have fit in well in Vance Joseph's defense. So really there weren't any huge losses from a personnel standpoint. At least they filled them with younger players that had talent. And again, that's why Arizona's taking that big leap. They added players at positions of a need, and positions that they had to fill where players left, they got better and they got younger. So when you check off all those boxes and you already have a lot of good young talent like the Cardinals did, you're going to win a lot of games. And I know real quick that you want to talk about this draft class, because they do have three players at the top of that class that have played significant snaps. Marco Wilson, a guy that I know that you remember me talking him up throughout pre-draft. I wanted the Seahawks to draft him. He's done some nice things for the Cardinals this year and given them another young corner to put in that secondary.
Yeah, he really has. And I wouldn't have been surprised at all if Seattle had selected him, had the Arizona Cardinals not stolen him just a couple of picks before Seattle was on the clock. Now, Trey Brown, Seattle's corner, has played very, very well. To me, that's one of the more encouraging things that we've seen. But yeah, I think that Marco Wilson was very high on Seattle's board. I think that he has played very well so far this season. And he matches a lot of the physical parameters that Seattle has prioritized in the past. You took the words right out of my mouth, buddy, with the Rondale Moore and some of the dynamic plays that he's made. Sure, he's made a couple of rookie mistakes out there that was critical in their loss to the Green Bay Packers a couple of weeks ago. But at the same time, he has an unbelievable combination of physical power and explosive breakaway speed. He is the kind of guy that can run right by you or break through tackles. So I think that he is a critical element to Arizona's offense, because they do have as many dynamic receivers as they do. And so you know that a rookie like Rondale Moore, of course he's going to get one-on-one coverage, and he's the kind of guy that can break free. And then again, with Zaven Collins, as you mentioned, with Isaiah Simmons, and the fact that you have two very dynamic run and chase kind of linebackers who also are as good in coverage as they are, both former safeties, considering the tight ends, the slot receivers that are in the NFC West division, we just were kind of criticizing the Seahawks coaches and front office personnel. I think that Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim, the general manager of Arizona, both deserve an awful lot of credit for how well the Arizona Cardinals have played so far this season.
And really, both of them were under fire going into the season. Kingsbury, the Cardinals kind of floundered the second half last season. Keim has had a number of missed draft picks. Josh Rosen, anyone. There have been some questionable decisions made by him. But both of them redeemed themselves this offseason in free agency and in the draft. Real quick, let's get inside the numbers. Just breaking down the Seahawks' upcoming opponent here, the Cardinals. A couple things that jumped out to me on offense. 31 minutes and 9 seconds. That's their average time of possession. That's the ninth best in the NFL, considering the Seahawks are still way behind everybody else at 32nd in the NFL. That's not necessarily ideal. You know, when you think air raid offense, you're not thinking time of possession, but the Cardinals do a really good job of sustaining drives and chewing up clock. And James Conner has helped with that. So that jumped out to me. Also, Kyler Murray, 72% completion percentage. They give him easy throws, and he converts on them. He has the highest completion rate among qualified quarterbacks in the NFL, so he's going to get the ball out quick. He's going to be decisive, and he is going to be accurate. And, oh, by the way, he's also a pretty darn good deep ball thrower as well. So he's the complete package throwing the football if he's back this week.
Yeah, and Corbin, that's one of the reasons why I agreed to join you on this thing. You're so much smarter than I am, you know. But I'll just jump out there with one of the statistics that to me is a simple one, but also a very telling one. The Arizona Cardinals are scoring 28.7 points a game, and that's without Kyler Murray the last couple of weeks. So again, you're averaging 4 touchdowns a game going up against a Seattle offense that obviously didn't score a single point. Then that's pretty daunting right there. And then it's not like Kyler Murray is just focusing in on DeAndre Hopkins as he did a season ago. And basically that was one of the reasons why the Cardinals were as beatable as they were. He's spreading the football around him. You have 4 different receivers with at least 360 receiving yards so far this season. And as you accurately pointed out before, they also brought in the tight end Zach Ertz, who has brought a different element to this offense as well. So again, this is the Arizona Cardinals offense that I think might just be the statistics be, you know, say whatever you will. I think this might be the most explosive offense in all of the league.
Yeah, one issue they've had, they've coughed the football up a lot. 10 fumbles when running the football, which is by a wide margin the most in the NFL. So that's something Seattle has to keep in mind. They have coughed the football up a lot. Maybe you can get a few quick turnovers. That would be a way to steal this game. The Panthers were able to do that a couple times in their 34-10 victory over the Cardinals last week. So something to keep in mind. Now, the Cardinals on defense have also been a top 5 defense for most of this season. Vance Joseph's unit has really improved with the infusion of the young talent. Obviously, Buda Baker, we haven't even mentioned him, being back, all-pro safety. Byron Murphy playing really well. The 2 young linebackers, Chandler Jones rushing off the edge. This is a team with a lot of really talented football players on defense. A couple numbers that jumped out to me, 17.6% of their defensive drives this year, almost 20% of those drives have ended in a turnover. That's the 3rd highest rate in the league. So I just mentioned Seattle wanting to be opportunistic. Arizona has been opportunistic, getting turnovers all year long. And 19 pass plays of 20-plus yards, the 2nd fewest behind only the Buffalo Bills. This is not the 2019 or 2020 Cardinals where you're getting a bunch of downfield throws on them. It just hasn't been happening. Improved secondary coupled with that pass rush that they have, which, by the way, 7th best sack rate in the entire NFL. You put those 2 things together, you marry your pass rush with a secondary like that, very hard for the other team to hit plays downfield.
Yeah, the defensive coordinator, Vance Joseph, is one of the most aggressive coordinators in all of the league, and he's got the horses on this defense to be able to pull that off, as you mentioned, with the dynamic pass rush and then some ball hawks in the secondary, including a couple of former UW guys, of course, in Buda Baker and in Byron Murphy. Then, again, this is a defense that is very formidable. To me, one of the surprising things about them, however, if we were going to kind of end on more of a positive note from a Seahawks perspective, is the fact that this is a team that you can run the football on.
Oh, yeah.
And so Shane Waldron, if you're listening, you can run the football on. The Arizona Cardinals are allowing 4.8 yards. You only have to do that twice to be very, very close to getting a first down. So again, to me, I think it's a very obvious way that the Seahawks could be trying to attack the Arizona Cardinals is try to run the ball right down their throat and stick to it when it's due.
And they will miss tackles too. They have the seventh most missed tackles in the NFL. That has contributed to their issues defending the run. So you got to go after them. And if you're having some success, even if early on they're stuffing you some, you got to stick with the run game. And they didn't do that against Green Bay when it was working pretty well. So again, Shane Waldron, this is a game you should be able to move the ball on the ground, and maybe you can win the time of possession battle, something they haven't been close to doing really most of this season. They've really struggled in that regard. That's why they're 32nd in the league. So those are going to be big keys, getting that run game going. Maybe then you can get a few shots downfield against a secondary that's going to be aggressive. They're going to take their gambles. But this is a much improved defense, a very good football team, the Arizona Cardinals. And we're going to learn more about them tomorrow when we start diving into the matchups. As always, Matchup Wednesday, Rob and I are always excited about that. Thanks for making Locked On Seahawks your first listen every day. Now make your second listen, the Locked On Bets podcast. It's your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. Make sure to check it out wherever you listen to your podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Make sure to check out Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. As I mentioned a moment ago, we look forward to this every week. It's Matchup Wednesday coming up tomorrow. We'll be looking at the key matchups to watch when the Seahawks are on offense against that much-improved Cardinals defense. And, of course, what this Seahawks defense can do against a high-powered Cardinals offense, assuming Kyler Murray is back under center this week. You won't want to miss it. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Go Hawks.